I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Over the last year, through my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire me and remind us to take better care of ourselves, and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. I'm so honoured to welcome my friend Sheila Shoga.
I'm so happy to be here, which I really am. Today of all days, Georgie, actually, because I just came from my checkup, my oncologist, and you know, I know you get this, and I'm further down the path of having come through cancer. I had thyroid cancer 7.5 years ago, so I was still seeing my oncologist for every 6 months. And today I found out I don't need to see him again until another year down the road.
Wow.
So today is a really good day. A good day for that. The sun is shining and I'm here with you, you beautiful person, and we're having the chat. So I feel very lucky today.
I feel every time I'm in your presence, Sheila, like I feel something, you know, I just feel like you're so powerful. I've been lucky enough to get to know you through Bio. And I think especially for people who go to Bio, like when you walk into the room, it's just you have this kind of energy and this I think it's like a healing energy. Like whenever I speak to you, like I just feel better after it. And through my own cancer journey, even though we didn't really know each other, there was always a message from you, like when I needed it. And I was saying to you before we started recording that I felt a bit emotional because like you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for what it's worth, I'm actually kind of lost for words. You are so incredibly kind. And you've got such a big heart to say that to me. Says everything about you, by the way. Nothing about me, everything about you. And I'm quite moved, again, hearing you say those words. It's an absolute privilege for me to be part of days like Bio and to meet amazing people like you. Because what I said to you before we started recording, and I genuinely mean this, the first time I saw you in the Bio space was in Dublin. I'd lovely chat with your mum outside before you took to the stage. And I remember you were in the thick of it at the time. So I just thought, wow, this is an incredibly brave person to do this, because even though I can talk now about having had cancer and what I learned along the way, if somebody said while you're going through it to connect with people on social media and to talk your way through it and offer yourself to help others, I don't know if I would have had it in me. So it really says something about you and how you are as a person and how bloody strong you are. And I don't think, you certainly didn't realise it that day. I think you're starting to learn it now and appreciate it now and step into it more and more, which you are doing with this brilliant podcast series. But I remember that day because you're so beautiful physically. You're so petite. And yet when you stood up on that stage, you were a powerhouse. And you have no idea, despite your voice being frail physically, there was a strength behind you that I have goosebumps now just thinking about it again, because you have no idea how you completely filled up the space with admiration, and you had so much compassion for what you were going through, which was really important, but also anything that anyone else was going through, because that has always been your message. You were trying to help other people become aware that this can happen. And you know, cancer doesn't care who you are, doesn't care what background you're from, what age you are, whether you're, you know, what you do for a living. It does not care. And you were creating that awareness all the while going through your own journey, which really says something about you as a person. And I have so much admiration for you. I really, really do. That day was a very powerful day and everybody in the room felt it.
Oh, it was amazing to be asked by Aveen and Sharon to come along and tell my story. And I suppose sometimes I look at my life now and, you know, people follow you on Instagram and I wonder if they all of this happened by accident. Like, none of this was planned. I just wanted to warn people to check their breasts, because I really didn't think breast cancer happened to women under 50. So that's how it started, and it's turned into this, and I'm so grateful for it. And I know that you've spoken as well about your life changing for the better through it. And it's kind of a messed up thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I will talk about that. But I do think what happened is that you used the tool of social media as a way of connecting in a real way with people. And I think regardless of whether people like you or don't, and I've been talking about this myself on Instagram over the last day and a bit, you cannot deny when somebody is being raw and real and authentic. You just feel it, okay? Whether you like the person or you don't, you just feel it. And whenever you spoke to the little camera on your phone, you could just tell how honest you were, and people connected with that, which is why you're now stepping into your truth, stepping into your power, using your gift, because you're a broadcaster and you're actually talking to people in a real way. And it's so refreshing. I applaud you for doing it. And whether you realize it or not, you're inspiring me. So thank you.
Thank you. My God. Sheila, how much has your life changed over the last 7 years?
OK, well, I mean, it's so radically changed in every way in terms of how I was living, where I was living, who I was sharing my life with. It's completely different. But it's not about becoming a different person. For me, it's like going backwards in a way and kind of rediscovering who I really was. Who I really am, who was always in there, but I wasn't really tuning in. And that might sound a little bit esoteric as a concept to some people, but I think when you go through challenges and tough stuff, and every single one of us go through challenges in different ways, and it's all relative. I always say, if something is causing you pain or discomfort, it's worthy of your attention. So just because, you know, we were struck by something big like cancer, it doesn't mean that somebody who doesn't have cancer or has some other issue, that they don't think, oh, well, I didn't get cancer, I didn't get such and such, so who am I to say, you know, I have a problem? Well, if it's causing you pain, it's worthy of sitting down and looking at it. So for me, I suppose, no more than yourself, when you're diagnosed with something like cancer, it forces you to take a look at your life, because there's nowhere to hide. You can't hide from it. And acceptance is the first huge step in recovering, I suppose, and dealing with it. But yeah, my life completely and utterly changed when I think about it now, and I think about who I was. I suppose I was kind of trundling through life, because, you know, you're kind of going from work to work and there's money in the bank and you think everything is grand. But then if you're not really listening to what's going on for you, your body can give you signs. My body was giving me signs that something was up, but I wasn't really tuning in until I was forced to. So, you know what, I'm much more comfortable with myself now. I feel like I can look in the mirror and not be as critical. There's still a critical voice in there. It's not that I never feel negative thoughts or negative emotions, but I'm more accepting of who I am now. I'm nearly 40. I'll be 40 on the 13th of April. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I feel like my 30s were a decade of huge learning. I got diagnosed with thyroid cancer at 32, and it shook my world up. But I actually had a brilliant decade, because I got to really like myself. And now I'm like, bring on the 40s. I'm really looking forward to them, you know.
And was there a moment that changed, like when you were going through treatment? Like for me, it was, everyone knows, it was when I read Oprah's book that the kind of switch went in my brain. What was the turning point for you?
It's funny that a guy I used to work with described me as a pragmatist one day, and we were having a chat about it, because he said, you seem really pragmatic in how you approach all aspects of your life. And it probably the same came when it came to being diagnosed with cancer, because straight away I went into, OK, what are we going to do? How do we deal with this? What do we need to do next? So I never believed, to be honest, that it was going to take over. I truly never thought that. Also, to be fair, my prognosis was pretty good, because it was early and I had the best, no more than yourself, the best medical care. And I was told, this is what needs to happen. So we go step by step. You know, you've had the first operation, you need to have the second, then you need to have treatment. Of course, I had many moments of, you know, if that kind of overwhelming sense of, oh God, what if it's not okay? But there was always a bigger, stronger, louder voice that told me to calm down and that I was going to be grand. I wonder, did I have any moments within it that were, I was kind of forced to examine my life because a lot of big stuff happened all at once. So I was diagnosed with cancer. Within that first year, I also went through a breakup of a relationship. And then soon after that, I lost my job. Wow. So they say things happen in threes. Mm. So I think I was clinging on for so long. And for me, the greatest shift happened in my life when I just let go.
And just
went with it.
Surrendered.
Yeah. I went, okay, can I change this? Mm-hmm. No. What happens if I keep clinging on? Do I feel better? No. Right. What do I have to learn from this? What is going on here? So I knew that I had to delve deep. My first step into that was actually accepting it. And the first step really to acceptance is just letting it go. And I suppose that's letting go of pride and all of those negative emotions that you feel, because there was humiliation. There was, you know, it's all ego. It's all ego. So my ego is damaged. You know, I felt like, oh my God, all right. So I now physically I was told I had this thing that I needed to sort, and that in the form of cancer. Now I'm a single cheese and I'm going, where the hell and where am I going to live? So my sense of groundedness and belonging and home was ripped out from underneath me. So it was extreme. It was an extreme period in my life where I felt completely on uneven ground, you know. And I was absolutely forced. It felt like I was at, and I've spoken about this before, but I felt like I was at that crossroads where, well, I can either keep going down this road, which is cling on, fear-based, you know, screaming at this is not fair, this is not me, and victim, and you just make yourself feel worse and worse and worse. Or else you go down the other one where you just go, right, well, I'm going to have to let this be and let it fall in on top of me and allow myself to die in a way. So you're allowing, you have to allow certain parts of you crumble and die for you to be reborn within it. And that might sound completely off the wall to some people, but I think unless you've experienced it, you don't realize actually there's huge truth in that. And it was the moment that I allowed it be and that I started to go inward and take responsibility for where I was in my life and what part I had played in the process, that things started to change. And that was really hard work, because when you stop pointing the finger outward and saying, poor me, and why did I get cancer, and why did this happen, and why did that happen, and you start to ask yourself questions as to what did I do, who am I, what makes me tick, why am I here, what, you know, what am I about, that you start to learn.
And how did your, like, basic day-to-day life change? Like, did you do things before that you never did afterwards,
yeah,
like exercise or walking or just an appreciation for
completely.
The outdoors?
And I remember that first appointment after I had gone through the operations and treatment had finished. And, you know, you're told, you know that feeling. And it's quite amazing when you're told that there is no more sign of cancer. I felt like I had just been given superpowers. I felt like I was walking on air. Everything looked clearer. Everything smelled sweeter. Everything just had, it was like I was wearing lenses of pure gold. Everything looked and felt beautiful. And if only I could capture that and bottle it. It's like you're always trying to remind yourself of that. There is an afterglow that, unfortunately, as time goes on, it lessens a little bit. So I do try and remind myself of that. And certainly this morning, coming out of Vincent's Hospital after my checkup, my oncologist, I felt that again. And it's a gorgeous feeling when you know, you're on the right path and you get that, you know, smile from. And at the end of the day, they want to see people like you and me come in and tell them good news. Mm. They don't want to tell people that. They don't want to tell people the news that they have cancer or cancer is back or that they have to do treatment. They love to be able to tell, you're doing good, off you go. and see you again in whatever amount of time. So it's a lovely, lovely feeling. And yeah, I just feel so grateful for it.
I think it's so true what you said about seeing things differently. So when I just finished chemo, one of my best mates, Rebecca, was getting married in Portugal and I really wanted to go. It was in between chemo and radiotherapy, I think. So anyway, we decided to go, and you know my friend Audrey, she's an artist.
Oh, she's
an amazing person.
She's so fab.
So we went down to the beach the morning after the wedding, and it was just the four of us. So it was Audrey and Rob and me and Jamie. And I just said to the guys, get up, I want to get into the sea, right? So I'd never in my life been in the sea. Like, I'd just kind of dip my toes in and be like, oh, it's too cold. So I was like, guys, get up, please, come on, we have to go down. And they were like, oh God, okay. So we went down and the beach was packed and it was full of people that were at the wedding. So I was like, can we go down the far end? Because I'm wearing a wig, I want to take it off. And I just have this feeling that I need to jump in the sea. They were like, okay, okay.
Love
so we
it.
Went down and I was like to Audrey, now Audrey, be quiet because I don't want people to look down when I take off my wig. And she goes, okay, no problem, no problem. So I whipped off the wig and we ran down to the water. The lads had jumped in ahead of us. And it was so cold. Of course, the two of us just started absolutely screaming our heads off. So now the whole beach is looking down and I'm just in the sea, you know, with no hair, with the people that I loved. And I just got right under. It was just this weird thing. And I just jumped right under. And I think I felt the effects of that day for a few months afterwards. Like, I just felt amazing. It felt very like healing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that was the moment for me that everything changed in terms of exercise and the appreciation for the outdoors and things like that, because it was like the firsthand benefits that I seen for myself.
I really love this. And I think you wouldn't have realized how, I suppose, liberating, weirdly, a diagnosis like cancer can be when you're out the other side. Do you realize how grateful you are for your body? And as you said, like, and you spoke about it there, it felt healing, and the ocean is healing. It reminds me of something that I'm going to tell you now. And it was years ago. It was years before not many years before I was diagnosed with cancer myself, but it's related to cancer and water. But on that, isn't that such a powerful thing to be able to not care about anything? And I think that's what one of the many gifts that cancer has given me, which is not really caring anymore and being okay with my body and who I am and owning my shape and my cellulite and my lines and all of those things, that you just, you're going, well, my legs are not the perfectly toned, image that I see maybe in magazines or whatever, but they allow me to walk and move and they're functioning for me. And I'm so bloody thankful to have them, and they work. And it allows you just to view your body in a completely different way and love it in a way that I really didn't before. But I remember years ago when I had a radio show on a Saturday with News Talk, we did an OB, an outside broadcast down in Sligo. I was an ambassador for a fantastic charity called The Dip in the Nip. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yes, I have heard of this.
Oh my God, it was amazing. So we did the OB from a hotel live, but we went down to the beach in the morning and we got interviews with the men and women who were there, right? So, I mean, I'll never forget this morning. It was so incredibly powerful and so much crack, but everyone there had a connection to cancer. Either they had gone through it themselves, they were going through it, or family members, or a lot of them had lost people that they love to cancer. The idea is it's skinny dip into the water. So it was a cold morning and they all dress up like, you know, it's like feather boas and it's like funny hats and whatever. And you had couples going in, you had women only, you had men. And just listening to their stories was amazing. But what I really noticed, which I thought was really very, very powerful, on the morning, as they're about to go in, there's this nervous energy and all this kind of giggles, right? So they realize they have to do it. So there's, you know, there's a big horn and they have to run into the water and they're all screaming and shouting and they're going into the water and they're running. And then there's this like stillness and peace that comes onto the water. It's weird. They're in the water and they're still screaming because they're cold. And then there's like, it's just a calm. But what I noticed was women who were running in and trying to cover themselves up, because they're running naked, they're trying to cover their breasts or cover their bum, and they stroll out like warrior queens.
Wow.
I remember being so moved by it. And it was like they were just owning themselves, owning their bodies, celebrating their bodies. And it was so beautiful and so bloody powerful. It was a real privilege to witness it. And myself and Aoife, the producer, felt exactly the same thing. We were like, wow, did you feel what I felt? And we were just in awe of them. So in a space of not even minutes, it was like the water transformed the energy of them. I suppose, you know, water is cleansing, it's renewing, and you could really see that. It was like they were transformed coming out of the water. So I completely connect to what you're saying.
Yeah. So that's from me and Sheila. If you haven't gotten into the sea before, we highly recommend it.
Totally.
How different are you now?
I'd like to think that I'm more laid back. I mean, I still have qualities in me that I will always have, in that I have to train myself not to be so reactive. I can be sometimes a bit reactive if I'm not feeling balanced or calm or grounded, because I'd be quite fiery by nature. And most people who know me know what you see is what you get. So I would tend to speak my mind. I would always like to think that I'd be kind within it. But if you catch me on a bad day, or if I can be a little bit, there's a bit of a bite to me sometimes. So I've learned to probably, you know, calm that a little bit, which is good. And I suppose I've learned the tools through learning a bit about myself. And then obviously I went on a path of yoga training, which really, really helped me. I've just become more aware, I suppose. And with that, I think I just don't fret too much about things that I've no control over. So I think I'm just more, I'm probably calmer, I think, of myself.
I want to know how you de-stress, because I think it's almost the root of everything. Like, if you can keep yourself de-stressed, you can kind of work on other things. But, you know, I just think in Ireland, we're all so stressed.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen to me, luckily, that often, but it happened to me recently, a number of weeks back. I was off balance. I didn't feel calm. I was in, you know, we talk about the rest and digest versus the fight or flight response in the body. I wasn't in my rest and digest, and I absolutely was reacting from fight or flight. I was that adrenaline fueled madness, actually. And I wasn't calm. And with that came reactions rather than responses. And I think when I'm like that, which, as I said, it doesn't happen often, for me, it always comes back to the simple stuff, which is breathing. So I notice that if I'm getting stressed, my breath is not as deep or as long as it normally is. It's shallower. It's higher up in my chest. And I think that's the same for a lot of us, whether we realize it or not. If you're stressed at work or at home in a situation, you're struggling to catch your breath. So I would always say the first port of call on kind of the toolkit to deal with stress would be breathing, for me. Absolutely breathing. And it doesn't mean sitting down on a yoga mat and meditating for long periods of time. If you can and you do, brilliant. But not everybody does or can, for now. But for me, it's just, even if you're at the traffic lights, you're feeling a bit stressed, concentrate on deepening your breath. So breathing really deeply in through the nose, expanding the tummy as big as it goes. So instead of actually holding your belly in and tightening the abs, you're letting it loose, and allow that breath to go out until you're kind of really sucking your belly button in towards your spine. You do that a few times, you feel your body drop and relax. It's, you kind of have to just give it a few breaths, but it really, really does help. I think breathing is key to that for me. Then it's simple things like kind of transforming your mood and putting it into a good mood. So it could be just listening to your favorite songs, or making yourself move, put on some music and have an old dance around the kitchen. There was a song that was on an ad recently and I loved it, and I downloaded it on my phone, and I dance like an Egypt to it now with my little son around the kitchen, and he's laughing at me because he's thinking, geez, this mental one is my mother. But I feel great then. So it's simple things like movement, moving the body. It helps shake up your thoughts and your emotions as well. So it's the simple stuff, really. I find breathing, listening to music, a bit of dance if you feel like it, or getting out in nature. There's nothing like it. If you're feeling stressed, throw on the runners and out you go. A friend of mine talks about it. It's like dumping your crap in nature, energetically speaking. Mm-hmm. It's like you can feel it drip off your your fingernails, you know. I always feel better if I just go out for a walk in nature.
When I was sick, I had to go outside because I had a baby. So I had to bring her for a walk, you know, twice a day.
Yeah.
So I think if I hadn't have had a baby when I was sick, I would have maybe just stayed in bed because obviously I was so exhausted. But I can't say enough how much of a benefit getting out into the air was for me.
Yeah.
Because every time I came back, I felt better. It's for free. You just totally. Go outside your front door.
Yeah, completely. And you know what another great one is, and you probably know this as well, and it, you know, it might seem really hippie to some people, but it's just, it's simple, connecting with nature. We're human, we're here as part of this wonderful world. If you're feeling really, really stressed, and the weather is getting nicer, and if you have a patch of grass outside anywhere, just slip your shoes off, stand on the grass. It might sound mad, but honestly, you feel the earth grounds you.
Mm.
You feel grounded. And also sometimes even the coolness of the grass or the earth under your feet will actually be enough to kind of snap you out of whatever mood you're in. But just sometimes, and that helps you feel grounded, because a lot of time we're just running on nervous energy. So even if you can't do that, ground the feet when you're sitting down. Place both feet on the ground. Allow yourself to feel strong, because we're all strong. We're all capable of amazing things. Every single person, even if you're riddled with self-doubt or you feel you're not strong enough or you can do this or you can't do that, switching up how you speak to yourself is so important. And I'm a massive believer, as you know, from being part of BIO as well. I always talk about the power of affirmations, because I massively, massively trust in it now because I put it into practice. And as a friend of mine says, the evidence is in your life. When you do it over and over, our subconscious mind believes what we feed it. We're only tapping into a small amount of our brain power. We've all this available, grey matter that we're not tapping into. But if we feed a positivity and truth and honesty and strength, our body will follow. And I certainly did that when I was pregnant with Cathal. I really, really focused on affirmations, massively so. The dream was to have a natural birth. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it. I was very fortunate that things went my way, as in he was in the right position. I know there are many, many reasons why it can work and not work. But I managed to have a natural birth, and I fundamentally believe, yes, I did yoga. Yes, I did what I could physically, but it was because I trained my mind, you know, and I just thought it was fantastic, you know.
How did you feel in the weeks after giving birth? I know that I was so shocked at the tiredness because,
oh, yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone, you can't really describe it. And then I breastfed. So like, and I remember before I gave birth, they were like, breastfeeding can be a very lonely journey. And I was like, how the hell could it be lonely? I'm with my baby and I'll be so in love. But it's tough in the middle of the night. And I know lots of people listen to this podcast when they're feeding in the middle of the night. So shout out to all the mums. Did you find those couple of weeks tough?
Oh, completely, of course. And you're so right. And everybody tells you how tough it's going to be, but you don't realize it until you've kind of gone through it yourself. And I think parenthood, but particularly motherhood, as women, we're the ones physically going through it. We're the ones giving birth. It is utterly transformative, isn't it?
Mm.
I think you rewire as a woman when you become a mother. I feel like I'm completely viewing life in a different way. It changes your perspective. It deepens your compassion. And I suppose your perspective on the entire world shifts when this little being comes into your life, that your job is to guide them and empower them. And particularly when they're at those early days and weeks, they're so vulnerable and completely reliant on you. It's such a massive, massive responsibility. And it is, it's a shock to the system. It's like, you know, somebody spoke about childbirth saying that if you went through anything on a similar level in life, you'd be told to take to the bed for 2 weeks to recover. And yet you're handed this little being and it's like your job to, that's it, nourishment, nurturing, minding, and you know, it's like, oh, and then obviously you're kind of, if you're like most women I've met, you can't sleep in those early days because you're just staring at them in awe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you're going, oh my God, they're amazing, but oh my God, wow. So when you really need the sleep, you can't unwind. But it's oh my goodness, is it hard? It's so challenging. It's so rewarding and it's so magic, but it can be so many different things. And I think every woman's journey is different. I know friends of mine who didn't initially get that deep connection that a lot of women get from the moment of that they give birth and that it happened later. So I think there's all levels of normal, and we all have our own way of doing it. For me, I had the dream labour birth experience. And then I found breastfeeding unbelievably traumatic, where I wrote a piece about it for Her Family, and I got a huge reaction. Because, as you know, I'm in the market for being real and honest. And I suppose I made the assumption foolishly that because everything else went grand, sure, this will be grand. And it didn't work the way I thought it would. So after a number of weeks, I had to move to formula, and it wasn't necessarily my plan, but I realized that I had to stop beating myself up and making myself feel guilty, and that, you know, at the end of the day, it's not a one size fits all for women or for mothers. And we have to go gentle with ourselves through the process, because it can be really, really challenging.
And I think as well, like, not to try be a superwoman, you know, and that to remember yourself after you have a baby.
It's
so
easy.
To check in with yourself. Yeah. Because you're
totally.
You cast yourself aside, because all you care about is the baby. And then obviously you've got your husband, your family, everyone wants to see the baby. But, you know, what is going on inside of you?
Absolutely.
I think is really important to remember.
Completely. And I think that's probably a normal thing initially, that you are completely focused on this little person, because you have to be. But it's like when you do get a little bit more time, not that we get a lot as parents, but that you try to ask yourself, well, who am I? And you're trying to rediscover yourself again. And that can be tricky. It can be tricky because a lot of people feel, and I know that feeling that you feel like, who am I without? But we're not just the labels that we think we are. We're not just mothers or wives or girlfriends or whatever. Who are we on our own? So it's about really allowing yourself to give yourself that time. And I'm in awe of single parents. I see the benefit of in my situation, and I know you're the same. I have a really supportive partner. We're very much in it together, because it's hard work. And I think people who do it on their own are absolute superheroes, to be honest.
I absolutely agree with that. Talking about meditation, that's just when you go to BO, you bring the room on a guided meditation. Do you find a difference in the room before and after?
It's lovely because oftentimes we'll have people attending who are, you know, big into yoga or meditation themselves, or others who have never, ever listen to a guided meditation in their lives. So what I do is usually a very simple exercise. I try not to do anything too scary for anyone. So they just stay in their seats, and I just kind of bring awareness into the body. And then I tell them to close their eyes if they can. Some people get a bit giggly at this point and struggle with it. Others allow themselves to go straight away. You can just see when you look around the room who is just gone straight away, are those who are just feeling a little self-conscious, and that's okay, and they'll get there in their own time, and there's no right or wrong. So I'll just kind of tell them to follow my voice, and I'll do different kind of guided meditations. So it's what I love is the feedback I get afterwards, because some people can have a really profound experience in something that is quite simple, and it can bring up stuff that they hadn't even thought of before, or that they didn't think was concerning them, are that they want to bring about change in their lives. So it's a real privilege to allow that happen through me, without wanting to sound, again, too wishy-washy. I really feel I'm just the facilitator. You know, I'm saying the words and I'm using my voice, but it's not about me. It's just about what I'm allowing people to kind of open themselves up to and examine and look at. And how often do we really ask ourselves what we want in life, or allow ourselves to think about what we already have? Because a lot of times we're constantly going, I'll be happy when ... without realizing that actually what we already have might be somebody else's dream life. And actually, the more we celebrate and zone in on the good that we already have in our lives, the more it'll allow other things to flourish. So it's simply just allowing, triggering people to think of different things and look at it from a different perspective. But when you look at what you want, then what do you want from this life? What is your greatest desire? What makes you tick? You know, who do you want to be? you get people thinking and stuff comes up for them. And sometimes that stuff can be traumatic. So it's about holding the space with compassion and understanding that everyone is going through their own journey within that. So allowing people, and I would always make everyone aware that just be gentle with yourselves and each other in this space today, because I always feel, because I would be very open when I do a talk at Bill, and I've spoken at Bill about having had a miscarriage way before I ever said it on Instagram. And I remember saying this to Aveen, I feel like the space that we create at Bill is sacred, that it feels like you can say anything. And maybe that's my own naivety, but that's genuinely what I feel. I feel if you're going to be there and be truthful and honest, you're allowing yourself to be that, and you're also giving everybody else the opportunity to receive you in that way. So I feel there's a sacredness that comes from that. That's not religious. It's just about creating that kind of, you know, what is the word I'm looking for? Reverence. And I do feel that there's an air of reverence. We also laugh a lot. There's great crack. It's a great day out.
My friend Audrey, she's an artist. She goes to BO all the time. And she rang me last week and I said, I'm doing a podcast with Sheila. And she said, Georgie, she's a proper hippie. You need to ask her about what she really does in terms of meditation. So can you tell us?
Oh, I love Audrey as well. She's amazing. I don't need to tell you that I know that. But yeah, so basically, I always feel that there's a way in for people to connect with yourself in a maybe a deeper way, a more real way, and ultimately something that you do that makes you feel better. For some people, it's, you know, exercise or dancing, or with Audrey, it's her talent as an artist. For me, it's all about sound. So be it singing in the shower, or, you know, singing your nursery rhyme to Cathal. But a more profound way for me to feel a sense of calm is through chanting, which I know can sound really out there to some people. And to be fair, it was a bit of a mad idea to me initially as well. Basically, years ago, so it would have been about six and a half years ago, I went off on a yoga retreat over to England, over to Kent. And it was basically a weekend in a barn. So you were in a dorm with basically upstairs in a barn with a load of people, that complete strangers. And the retreat was a combination of yoga, but a fundamental part of the weekend was chanting, which I didn't realize at the time. And I remember when I first started to chant, I found it really funny. I was like nervous energy. It's that like, what? This is so different. This is so mad. I don't know about this. And then when I allowed myself to just let go and give it a go, it was amazing. And for me, it brought about a huge sense of calm in my body. And that weekend was a big weekend for me in my recovery, because I was on the yoga path and I was trying to kind of rebuild myself with everything I'd gone through in that year between cancer, breakup, job loss. And I realized that weekend I moved into a place of forgiveness. And people would say, how did you do that? Just by chanting. But it was a sense of clarity that I got and a sense of calm that it brought, that I felt like something just shifted in my heart. And I felt like I had forgiven myself for stuff I had done and how I'd behaved, and in turn others. And I felt lighter. I felt calmer. I felt more grounded in myself. They said, I just knew there was something in this. I needed to do more with this. So through my yoga study, I really connected with the mantra aspect of it, which is the sound meditation. And I suppose when you examine why it works, the science behind it is simply that we're all made up of energy and all cells pulsate or vibrate. But they can sometimes become, they need sometimes to be detoxed, I suppose, or cleansed. And when you chant, you are bringing about this kind of vibration in your body, because when you're making sounds, you can feel it when you speak. If you put your hand in your chest, you can feel that kind of nice vibration that you get. That's intensified when you're chanting or when you're singing, and particularly with the, you know, the different notes that you can sing or chant or whatever. And I always feel lighter after I do it. So it's sometimes I really feel like I have to ground myself in my body again when I do it for long periods, because it can just make me feel really lightheaded. I feel that good after it. So it works for me. It might not be the thing that works for you. It doesn't work for everyone. But I know a lot of people like me who would, you know, thought it was a bit nuts and gave it a go and then went, wow, I love this. This is great. And it's old wisdom. It's always been there. And when you look at us as Irish people, like sing songs are a huge part of Irish life. I'm from the west of Ireland, and that's a huge part of kind of my upbringing and singing songs, and it's a huge thing at celebrations and also at funerals. Are it's a way of celebrating people because it feels good. It feels good to sing, and chanting is effectively a form of singing, really. So yeah, it feels really good.
Well, Sheila, your voice and your words are a gift to us, and I think we can all learn so much from you. So thank you so much for being a guest on the Good Glow.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Just to let you know, I'll be in Arnott's in Dublin next Saturday, April 20th from 12, talking about skincare and makeup, as well as answering questions about my podcast and journey in the live Q&A. Please join me. You can find a link to tickets on my Instagram page. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review. Check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story, or you can follow me on Instagram at Georgie J. Crawford.